Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves. I am calling to you live this week from Niles, Michigan. Finally left Atlanta. Anyway, I have on the air my co-host, Rhonda Salvaccio, the story lady of ProfitableStorytelling.com. Rhonda, how are you?
Hey, I am fantastic, and wow, you're up in Michigan, and I'm just still here in my little place in the Ozarks, but our baby chickens, just a couple of them started to lay eggs today, so we're excited.
Oh, how neat. Well, we're right on the Indiana-Michigan border. We're visiting Bill's family. We had a family reunion this weekend, and Thursday we leave to go over to Cleveland for a family reunion for my family next weekend. It just really worked out well that everybody's family reunions were just all right in a row, so we could go do both of them.
Perfect. Bet you're having a great time.
Better times. It wasn't so darn cold up here. Are your leaves already changing? The leaves are already changing here.
Oh, no, not down here. Pretty far south as it goes, but we have had some cooler weather than normal. It's in the 80s today, but we had a few chilly days over the past week.
Well, it's only been in the 50s at night here, which is, for me is really cold. And the leaves are all changing. All the maple trees, they won't even have leaves by October 1st because they're all golden red already.
Amazing.
And that's early. That's like 6 weeks early.
Yes, it is.
So, who's our guest today?
Well, we have Johnny G, who is someone that I met because of the Top Affiliate Challenge reality show that I was a part of last year. We were both contestants and vying for the opportunity to get onto the show itself, and then, of course, trying to stay alive on the show, so to speak, while we were there. And since that time, I've been kind of watching what he has done, and he certainly still does affiliate marketing, but also has created some products.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's been really neat. And one of the things that I've seen him do is kind of cool is to put something out and then have a product that's about how they did it. You know, make whatever amount from doing a particular product and then have something about how they made that happen. And he's definitely working a lot of times with partners, getting other people involved, certainly getting affiliates involved for promotion. So I was just kind of looking at that going, yeah, that would be a really interesting guest for us to have here on the show.
Well, I am excited about having him here as well. Do you know his area code?
He is calling from Britain, and I'm not sure. We've been trying to check in with him to find out how he was going to call in. But he might be using
Skype. How do you raise
Skype?
Your hand?
Pardon me?
How do you raise your hand in the control panel? Do you know?
It is by hitting the number 1. So if you're there, just hit number 1, and that will raise your hand in the panel.
Johnny, if you could do that, that would be fantastic. I can't tell if this is you or not. Let me just unmute a couple people that I can't identify. Okay, so who's on the air with us right now? Who's from area 646? Somebody who doesn't want to talk to us, obviously.
Shy person.
Well,
okay.
I don't know where I'm going to find Johnny.
I'm not sure, and I had tried to reach him, but he is in Britain. Maybe he's told them how to make sure about the time, and Blog Talk shows you. But, you know, some things do happen. So
While we're waiting for him or looking for him, we can wing it.
Oh, absolutely. I've got some actually interesting ideas that came up because of the call that you had for everybody on Saturday. And it's something I've got a blog post about, yes, and very, very interesting. One of my longer posts, I guess, but talking about this whole notion, and it's very important for relationship marketing, of course, otherwise I wouldn't bring it up, but the whole idea of, are you an expert or are you an influencer?
That was a really cool discussion. So can we back up and give them some background on, you know, the whole topic? What does it mean to be an expert? What does it mean to be an influencer? And most importantly, why the heck does it matter at all to be either one?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was writing the blog post about this at profitablestorytelling.com, I had a lot of fun with that. And what I always like to do, and yeah, I can just give a definition, but rather than that, it's kind of fun to use some examples and to help people think through what the difference could be. So is that all right with you, Gina, if we kind of take that approach? Okay, cool.
Sure.
So let's stop and think about what expert is and what that means. And I know, even, Gina, if we lay business aside, you know, obviously we have plenty of experts because of our dealings in business on and offline and everywhere else. But besides what we do, don't we both know some experts?
We sure do.
I can think of there is a person who owns a restaurant that I like to go to who is an absolute expert at, oh my goodness, her blackberry cobbler is out of this world. Any of hers are over the top phenomenal. Her food is very good there. So she's certainly an expert at preparing food, in particular carrot cake, and their fried catfish is amazing, and the blackberry cobbler is great. And there are a number of things where she prepares that in it. That definitely makes her an expert because she can do that. And a lot of people, my mother, for example, she could bake from a mix fairly well. I mean, she can follow directions. But she in particular couldn't get very creative with making things like that. It doesn't make her a bad cook or a bad person. It just is not her area, right? So we have that restaurant owner who's an expert at making food. You know that if you ever take dry cleaning somewhere, those people have to know that, so they have to be the expert at dry cleaning or whatever, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Hopefully, otherwise you get your clothes back in there, you know, they look like Barbie doll clothes or whatever. If they're not the expert, they should know what they're doing. When we look at, I of course work with authors a lot, so I like to use examples of authors. And sometimes they're people I know, and sometimes just examples that I see. Well, we are 1 week away from the release of a new novel by Dan Brown. He's the one who wrote The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, and he now has one called The Lost Symbol that's coming out. And Gina, have you heard about that one yet?
I have not.
Well, maybe in the bookophile over here. Now, it is amazing the amount of buzz. I have started to pay attention to the level of buzz that's going on around this book. And here is something that I found very interesting. And, of course, Dan Brown, his book, The Da Vinci Code, is one of the top-selling books. In fact, at Barnes & Noble, it is the highest-selling fiction book ever with Barnes & Noble, which I thought was interesting.
That is very interesting. You mean even more so than the Bible?
Well, that is the most popular fiction book. I guess it depends on how you class the Bible. But the most popular fiction book at Barnes & Noble ever is The Da Vinci Code, the one that sold the most copies.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, Doubleday is the publisher for Symbol, and this actually relates to the whole conversation about expert or influencer and what the difference is and why it matters and all that other type of thing. Okay, so the Lost Symbol is coming out 1 week from today. It's already an Amazon number one bestseller. The number one of every book today on Amazon, of all of them, everything, not just in the category, but the whole shebang, is The Lost Symbol, and it's not even out yet. There is so much excitement and even secrecy over this book that at Doubleday, anyone who is involved with the production of the book has signed a non-disclosure agreement. There are very few who have even read this book, of course, the editor being one, and very few people have even read it. So there's, of course, a lot of mystique and mystery and suspense around the whole release.
Tell me the name of it again, because I'm trying to Google it and I'm not finding it.
The Lost Symbol.
Okay.
By Dan Brown. The publisher is Doubleday. Anyway, the Doubleday is the publisher. Would you like to take, well, you're Googling it, so you might even be seeing it right on your screen, but how many of these books are in the first run? The publisher has produced, or is currently, maybe they're not quite done, but they are making 5 million copies in the first print run of this book. Five million.
Oh, my goodness.
My jaw about hit the floor when I found that out. I mean, books don't even sell 5 million, period, in their entire history. As a matter of fact, I believe it's about 98.2% of all books produced do sell 100 copies. That's not 100,000, that's just plain old 100, 100. So considering that just to sell more than 100 copies is a big deal as books go, now here is this new fiction book, the first run, with 5 million copies.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. And it's kind of wild looking at Amazon. Amazon sells this for $16.17, but you can get different versions of it, some of which are as expensive as $27, and if you have the Kindle, it's only $9.99. So it's kind of all over the place, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's on Audible. It's on Kindle. And actually, putting your book on Kindle is a good move for any author these days. So, so that's a phenomenal thing. Now, partly why I bring up that one is a lot of people in business, we think about nonfiction because we're in business. But think about how much time and energy Dan Brown has put into studying symbology that he's used for 3 books now, starting from the Da Vinci Code. Actually, Angels and Demons was written first, but gained popularity later. All those books are being made into movies or have been. Angels and Demons came out a little while back. Of course, the Da Vinci Code was a movie, both wildly successful. And now the new one will be made into a movie. This guy is a fiction author, but he had to study a lot about symbology, and he has used that and all the secret society and things in his books. And, of course, people love secrets and codes and all that. That will never go out of fashion. Okay, so he is definitely an expert in that area because he's had to study it. He knows a lot more than the average person about symbology and the secret language of symbols and, you know, various other areas in church, Catholic Church history and different things like that. Now, if you notice that he is the number one bestseller 3 times over with these books that are out, also say that he is an influencer because just with him putting out a new book before it's out, he has this track record of previous success. People know his name. They're excited for the book. And the various things are being put into place to create a buzz about this new book that's out. And it hasn't even hit the stands yet.
That's awesome.
If that's not being
an influencer, I don't know what is.
Exactly. The Today Show is doing an entire series for like this whole week, all the way up through the 15th, which is the release date next week, where there are certain places that locations that figure prominently in the book. And they're having this whole thing of kind of a guess where type of a series going on for this whole week. So that is part of the crazy buzz for the book. And again, 5 million copies are being printed right now just for the first run. Yes, that is definitely being an influencer. And that's in an area that's in fiction, which a lot of people would not necessarily, I mean, you might because of your particular background, but a lot of folks might not think about how much an author of fiction might need to know and how they might actually be able to create buzz. And, you know, I could have used Harry Potter or any of a number of other fiction books, but this one is so current and fresh coming out right now, and I have never seen a campaign quite like the way this whole thing done for The Secret, The Lost Symbol, excuse me.
Well, that is really, really, really neat, Rhonda. So let's go back for a minute and talk about why does it matter? Who cares whether or not you're an expert or an influencer or anything else? So when you're on the internet as opposed to in the offline or brick-and-mortar world, the internet is really the information superhighway. Since it is the information superhighway, we need to keep that in mind. It's not the sales superhighway. People come to the internet seeking information. They are looking specifically for strangers with experience who can help them to solve their problems. That's what people want. There was a great study by a company called Bridge Ratings that I talk about all the time that looked at this particular issue. They asked 10,000 people back in 97, if you've got a problem, who would you be most likely to turn to? Back then, they said religious leaders, then teachers, then family, friends, and acquaintances. When they repeated the study in 2007, the number one answer came out, strangers with experience. Number two was family, friends, and acquaintances, then teachers. Religious leaders, well, people, I guess, don't turn to them for problems anymore. Anyway, you can read that whole study for yourself at askggg.com/influence. But I mention that only because that study is the one that's really saying that you need to be an expert and an influencer if you're really going to see success building a business, especially online. Now, there's two parts to that. There are those who are experts, but they're not really influencers. There are those who are influencers, but they're not really experts. And that's what Rhonda was just illustrating and talking about this particular book that's coming out. This is an example of someone who really is both an expert and an influencer. Let's see if we can come up with an expert example, Rhonda, of someone who's an expert but not an influencer.
Yeah, I can think of a lot of those. And think about so many people, and I'll just stick with nonfiction, but I'll use authors as an example. I know a lot of people who put out a book because they are an expert in a particular field, and they write a particular book that showcases what they know and that expertise. Let's just say they put their book on a website that's through their publisher or whatever, and they're maybe kind of expecting all of a sudden the floodgates to open and the Nobel Prize people would be contacting them or whatever. Well, just because that has written a book, which does certainly set them apart from many people who don't write a book, it doesn't necessarily mean the book is going to sell. It doesn't mean that they know anything about causing people to change their behavior. And that's the main thing between an expert and an influencer. An example I used in my blog post is you can be an influencer and not an expert. Think of maybe you're out to lunch with your good friend and you are maybe firmly resolved to make a really healthy choice. Your friend orders first and she gets this pasta in cream and cheese sauce or whatever, really rich type of a meal. You are going to probably be influenced to maybe order that deck that you wanted instead of the salad with lemon juice or whatever it was that you may have planned upon, because this person's choice has influenced you and has changed your behavior because of it. Okay? There are
that's a good example. You don't really necessarily have an expertise in weight loss and healthy eating and whatnot, but you know enough to at least be able to say, hey, I should be making better choices, and you're able to influence the person you're eating lunch with.
Exactly, okay? And someone can get you to see a movie, and this could be, doesn't have to be like a movie review, or it could be that your friend says, wow, I just went and saw such and such, and you, this is a great movie because of blah, 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 and know you'd love it. And the next weekend, what do? And the next time you get a chance, you're going to go to a movie, you remember, hey, my friend told me about the movie Up or whatever, and so you're going to go and see that because your friend influenced you. It doesn't make your friend an expert in movies or in the topic of the movie, but it just means that you have changed your behavior and have made a choice because of the influence that somebody had upon you.
Well, and in terms of being an expert, I see this all the time. I see people who go out and they hire other people to write their articles on their blog. And they get their blog articles put up, and their blog looks okay. Maybe it's got some AdSense ads on it. Maybe it's got some affiliate ads down the sidebar. And the articles are just that. They're just articles. They're clearly articles that show that that person's an expert, but it doesn't do anything at all to influence people whatsoever. Simply the words of an expert.
Right.
What's going to happen with that blog?
Well, it's not going to cause anything particular to happen. I mean, somebody might read the articles, but it's not going to cause them to do business with you.
And they might actually click on an AdSense ad just because they want to leave the website and it was convenient.
Right.
But you're right. Yeah. They're not necessarily going to do business with you.
Right.
If you really want people to be doing business with you, you need to be getting them to see you as both an expert and an influencer. This is in part why you hear me and so many other experts telling you that in building your business, you've got to follow your passion. If you're following your passion, it's going to be so much more likely that you're going to be an expert in what it is that you're talking about. That's just the nature of a passion, right?
Right.
At least you'll have a much more likely chance of at least sounding like an expert. And if you can sound like an expert while being a true influencer, now you might have a really good winning combination on your hands. When you're using the power of the internet is all about influence. I don't care whether you're blogging, whether you're using Twitter, whether you're using Facebook, whether you're in a forum, Web 1.0, Web 2.0, Web 3.0, whatever. Those who are truly influencers are going to get the greatest number of people to take the action that they are looking for them to take, period.
Right.
That might be buying a product. That might be signing up to your list. That could be jumping off a cliff for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
If you're truly an expert and an influencer, you'll be able to get people to take action easily. So often I see many students coming to me saying, oh, Gina, you got to show me traffic. I don't have enough traffic. And I'll say, well, what tells you you don't have enough traffic? And they say, well, I'm not making any money. Okay, so how does traffic equate to money? Because to me, they're not the same issue. The only time you need more traffic is if you're looking at your stats and it says zero visitors. If it's a money issue, then there's a good chance you could already be getting traffic, but that traffic isn't really doing anything. That's an issue of being an expert and an influencer. Conversion issues are really issues of whether you're being perceived as an expert and an influencer. There's lots of different techniques you can use to get people to see you as an expert and an influencer. You've got to start somewhere. But really you've got to work at being an expert and an influencer. And it's not something that you really are just born into. You don't come out of the womb as an expert and an influencer and you just automatically are one. It doesn't happen that way.
No.
Your voice as an expert and your voice as an influencer can evolve. Everyone can learn to be an expert and an influencer. And it's not just in your words. It's in all those little subtle cues that might combine with your words to create a true experience for your visitors. So your graphics, your fonts, the colors, the pictures, the videos, all of it together helps someone to see you as an expert or an influencer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for your blog post. Where would I find this, Rhonda?
You know, I realized that it's still posted as a draft, so it'll be out presently. I didn't realize.
Oh, I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, I will get it. I will get it out very, very soon. I just was looking and going, oh. So, yep, it's saved as a draft. I didn't realize that. So, anyway,
and by the way, I do love the new look of ProfitableStorytelling.com, just so you know. It looks phenomenal. Good job to you. Good job to Steve Holmes from BoomerCo.com. Had to get that little plug in there.
Yes, I was just going to mention him. He and his team do phenomenal, phenomenal work. I am so excited.
Let's put it this way. If you look at ProfitableStorytelling.com, you now really look like the expert that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And because you now look like an expert, you've already got a leg up in the influence department as well.
Right.
So let's go into talking about some of the principles that make you an influencer as opposed to just an expert. There's a great summary of the principles of influence. You'll find it at www.askggg.com/Cialdini. That's CIALDINI. I'll repeat that. askggg.com/Cialdini. CIALDINI. Cialdini has a book out called Influence. And in that book, he really did a lot of study and research to determine what it is that causes people to be influencers. How is it that people are influenced or persuaded to take action in some meaningful direction? He basically was able to use that research to boil it down to 6 principles. Now, those 6 principles are as follows. Number 1, first principle of influence and persuasion is reciprocity. This is also one of the laws of the universe, reciprocity. What that says is when you give something to someone else first, that person's natural inclination will want to be to give back to you. This is why we give people free reports and free ebooks and free stuff. Reciprocity. When you give to them, they want to give to you. So if you give to them, they'll give you your email address, their email address. If you give a free report to them, they'll buy your ebook so that they are essentially paying you back. The study that Cialdini did in his book was kind of cool. He was out looking at an association that was a charitable organization. They wanted to find out how they could improve the donations that were coming in as a result of some direct mail pieces that they were sending out. So they sent one batch out that just had the message in it asking for donations. And they did get some money. No questions asked, they got some money. But then they sent the next piece out to a very similar list. And this time, the only difference was they included some free address labels that the recipient could use on their mail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing fancy, just a plain old looking thing. They increased their donations by almost 20% by giving away those little address labels that cost them pennies. That was huge. There have been lots of studies done on the value of reciprocity and, you know, how much it can improve things. If you don't have people subscribing to your list right now, take a look at the reciprocity factor. Could you be giving something away that is more valuable than what you're giving away now that could get more people opting into your list? Could you do something through your list that could get more people to want to give back to you by buying your product? So look at what you can do to cause that to happen. That's the first principle of influence and persuasion. The second
I had a terrific example from a mailer that I received recently that ties exactly into what you just said. It was from the Arbor Day Foundation. Now, just so you know, typically the Arbor Day Foundation has a thing where if you will donate to them $10, they will send you 10 little seedling trees, little baby trees that you can plant. So that's something they do normally. Now, they sent out a survey, which maybe would have taken somebody 2 minutes to do. It took me about five, you know, with my vision issues. Sometimes it takes a bit longer, but it was no big deal. What was genius about this survey was they asked you if you would be kind enough to, you know, that you give them these couple of minutes. They were going to send you some bonus gifts. And by the way, some address labels were included in there. So you already felt a little beholden to them if you were a breathing human being just because they sent you those. Even those of us who know it probably cost them 2 cents, you know, it still is like, okay, you feel like you need to give them something. So they do. They say the first 50 respondents will get a bag of this certified organic rainforest protecting coffee. I don't recall the brand of it, but it was some coffee where when you bought it, it also helped protect the rainforest. So you could win that if you were one of the first 50. So in other words, that also caused you to want to respond as quickly as possible. Now, of course, who knows where you were in the batches of how this was sent off across the country, but you're probably going to try. And there were several other things that if you gave them at least, included at least $10 donation along with your response, then you'd get 10 trees. And a calendar, and I believe two other things. And it was one of the most brilliant direct mail pieces I've received in a long time that incorporated donations, a survey, gifts, and all those kinds of things.
Well, you know, it's funny because baby boomers especially, senior citizens primarily, really, really, really get sucked in with this little address label. I vividly remember my grandmother when she was alive. She passed away about 4 or 5 years ago. That woman would get all these different mailings. Every week she was getting another package of those address labels. And she started using them for so many different things. She'd start putting them on her recipe cards and giving her recipe cards away to family and friends just because she had so many of them. And, you know, every single time she got a package of address labels, she had to sit down and write a check. It might only be $5 to $10, but it was costing her about $100 a week just for all the address labels that she kept.
Oh, my gosh.
She was on a lot of mailing lists. And $100 a week on her $600 a month Social Security was a big chunk. It would have been so much cheaper for her to go out and have her own address labels printed. But she could not think about getting the address labels and throwing them away because someone thought enough of her to send them. And so she had to go and pay them back. And from, you know, the Adopt the Child Foundation to the Arbor Day Foundation and St. Jude's and you name it, Grandma was on those mailing lists. And they loved her. They were a nice, steady source of income for them, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Great example. So that's the first principle of influence and persuasion. Let's move on to the second, because we've got a few more to go. So the second is kind of cool. The second is commitment. If you can get someone to make a commitment they will be congruent to that commitment. In fact, many times, people will really go the extra length to be congruent to that commitment because otherwise they're really not a person of their word. And that's a big deal for folks, being true to their word. Mm-hmm. So here's what Cialdini did in the study. This is fascinating. He took a company, and I should go look online and see what it was. I think it was a service that set restaurant appointments, but let me make sure of it. It was a restaurant reservation service. And this company was setting up restaurant reservations. At the end of their calls, all of the operators were instructed to ask one question. They were to say, please call if your plans change. What was happening was a really large percentage of people were unable to show up for their restaurant appointment. And so they were either no showing or they were following what the person had asked them to do and calling and canceling. Well, the restaurant owner wasn't real thrilled with that idea. He wanted to find a way to get more people to live up to their commitment. Instead of having the reservationist say, please call if your plans change, Cialdini had them make one teensy, tiny little change. If you say, please call if your plans change, that's a command. That's not seeking a commitment. So Cialdini instead had the operators seek a commitment from the other party. They instead asked, will you call if your plans change? Now it elicits a plain old yes or no answer, right? No gray area. That person has to commit. If the person says yes, well, they're obviously going to need to call if their plans change because they just committed to it. You know, their responses and their show-ups increased tremendously. They went from something like close to 30% no-shows to only having about 10% no-shows. I'm doing this from memory, guys, so don't be upset if I'm wrong, but it's somewhere around there. That's huge, just from changing two or three little words in the sentence and adding a question mark to the end. It's part of why in your writing, when you're writing blog posts, when you're writing ebooks, when you're writing emails, asking rhetorical questions that are not necessarily rhetorical, they're questions you want people answering in their head at least, can be so powerful because you can seek commitment through those rhetorical questions. And if mm-hmm. you can get your reader to commit, even if it's just inside their head, that person is more likely to act consistently with that commitment. Have you seen this happen too, Rhonda?
Oh, of course. I mean, I love to ask questions in blog posts. Of course, you teach people to do that as part of your simple six-step, magic formula for writing a powerful post. And it's a powerful thing to do inside of anything, in a book, in any sort of thing where you're wanting someone to take an action. It makes them feel as if you're speaking directly to them and that there is a real communication between you going as opposed to some static thing that's happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So make sure that in your writing you're always asking for a commitment. Now the third principle is also kind of cool. The third principle is authority. Now, authority can come into play in lots of different ways. In Cialdini's study, he was looking at a businessman dressed in a suit, and he was looking whether or not people would follow him if he crossed the street. So they had this cross the street on red. They had him cross on green. When he was dressed in the suit, people followed him. No matter what color the light, they followed him. If they instead put him in a pair of shorts and flip-flops, people didn't care. He was just some dude crossing the street. The authority that came with his dressing like a businessman, dressed in a suit and wingtips, shirt and tie, the whole nine yards, was what caused people to take the action that he was taking, what caused people to follow him. if you're going to be on a teleconference with someone, you need to speak in an authoritative voice. You don't want to be so laid back that you become one of them.
Right.
In your writing, this is why I teach that after you've written your blog post or your email, you want to go back and actually go so far as to do a search. Search for the words I, me, my, our, us, and we. I, me, my, our, us, and we. Remove every single instance of them. Our teachers were dead wrong when they taught us to act politically correct. You do not want to lower yourself to the level of your reader. Period. It's not, we have this problem. You have this problem. You're the expert. If you still have the problem, the audience is never going to see you as an expert.
That's right. You just killed your credibility.
Yes, for sure you will never be elevated to the level of an influencer. Period. There are no exceptions to that rule. So it's something that can totally change the power of your writing and make the biggest difference, I think, in getting people to see you as an expert and an influencer. Just about every student I've ever taught, when they're first getting started in blogging and writing and trying to influence people, has a really tough time with that whole idea of the we syndrome. My husband calls it the royal we. My husband, for years, every word out of his mouth had the royal we in it because he was trying to be politically correct. Used to drive me batty. And people would oftentimes tell him that he was condescending. And he'd come home really upset. Oh, this old biddy told me I was condescending again. Well, when you talk to people using that royal we, it can seem condescending to people. They can see that you're someone who is above them, and yet you're talking to them as if you were one of them, and they look at that as you're putting them down. Don't accidentally put them down, and don't lower yourself to their level. Big, 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 big principle. How else does authority come into play, Rhonda?
Well, you know, there's a lot about authority that comes through, and this whole thing about being an influencer and even perceiving yourself as an expert, yes, the words that you choose and all of that, but there's so much about it that's because of your mindset.
There is.
And being an authority and coming across as an authority, yes, part of it is, of course, is the word choice, and that is a big deal. But if you have the mindset that you're not quite there, it can come across when you write something as if you are a child wheedling a favor, hanging on to mama's skirts. And I've had people, for example, ask me about becoming a guest on a radio show, the different one that I do, and one person in particular, I was like, well, I'd love to be a guest on your show, and I could talk about this or I could talk about that. And what it really came is, it's like a little kid going, please, Mama, can I have a cookie? There was no authority, no expertise that came through in her manner whatsoever. That's not the sort of person that I would want as a guest, because that's going to come through in the sound of their voice and their delivery as well as anything that's in writing.
You know, one that gets me even more. The one that says, oh, maybe someday when I grow up, you'll even consider having me as a guest on your radio show.
Ah!
Yeah.
Ah! This was not said by a 5-year-old either.
Right. No, I have had 60-year-old people say that to me. Not very authoritative at all. Back when I was still brokering joint ventures, I was writing on the askggg.com/blog. So if you want to look at some of my earlier writings, they're out on that website. Back then, I always thought of myself kind of as the JFK of the internet marketing world. That's how my husband described it anyway. I saw myself as just being one of the guys. And it came through in my writing, and it was very intentional that I wanted to be one of the guys. And I really wasn't very authoritative. As a result, every single blog post, I would almost beg people to leave comments. For 2 years, I did not get one single comment. I just figured comments must not be working on my site for a while because I could not get a comment to save my soul. I knew I had traffic. I could see that people were reading, but nobody was leaving a comment. One day, Henry Gold and I got into this huge argument. He basically told me that I needed to be a snob, and that if I couldn't find a way to be a snob right away, I was going to be poor forever. And I'm like, well, that's not a very nice thing to say. And besides that, there's just no way I'm going to be a snob. That's not me. It's too out of character for me. I can't do it. And he says, well, stay poor. I'm rich. Okay, Henry. Thanks a lot. So it really, it was something that really hit me hard. And I knew that couldn't be right. So I went out looking for the answer. I blogged about it first. Then I went and researched it a little bit more. And Henry had made the comment that Terry Dean was a snob. And I'm like, Terry Dean is the furthest thing from a snob that I've ever seen. I mean, he's a minister, for goodness sake. He is no more a snob than I am.
Right.
So I went to Terry's website, and I went looking for the answer. And in it, I came across the post that Terry had written about being the authority figure. He eventually ended up coming back to the askggg.com/blog and leaving a comment about this issue because I kind of dragged him into the conversation by linking back over to his post from my blog. WordPress is neat about that. You put a link in your post that links not to just terrydean.org but directly to the post on his website, his dashboard will tell him that I've done that, and he's got a choice of whether he wants to go investigate or just go on to whatever else he was doing. Anyway, Terry came over, and in his comment, what he really helped me understand was that Henry really wasn't quite right when he said you needed to be a snob. What you do need to be is someone who has an air of authority. You don't need to be better than someone else. You need to have more experience than someone else. You need to know your words are right because of that experience. And you need to talk in a way that is congruent with that experience that you have had. So if you do follow your passion to build your business, if you have had some success in what it is that you're talking about, you don't want to come across as, well, if you wanted to maybe try something, you could kind of guess and try like this. Weak, wimpy. If you're the expert, then be the expert. Well, what you want to do is this. Step one, step two, step three, step four. Very authoritative. As I put this newfound knowledge to use on the FGGG blog and started seeing myself still as the JFK of the internet marketing world, but at a new level, because JFK was very much an influencer and he was also very much an authoritative figure, instead of trying to talk like I was part of the group, I instead tried to talk like I had a lot more experience than any individual member in the group, and I wanted them to benefit from that experience, the mistakes I had made, and the wisdom that I had. You know, instantly I started getting comments. Instantly. And that's the only thing that changed about what I was doing. I didn't get any more visitors. I didn't have any different topics. I didn't change my layout. No extra plugins. I simply started talking with an air of authority. If you're finding that people are not commenting on your blog, if you're finding that people are not responding to your emails, try being more authoritative. It can make an enormous difference. Are you still with us, Rhonda?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, so what's our next principle? Our next principle is the one you hear most internet marketers talking about. Social validation. The concept of social validation says that if you've got some proof that what you're saying is really true or that what you're saying really works, that people are going to be a lot more likely to take action on what you're telling them. Again, Cialdini did a study. This was a really funny one. Have you ever had those people who come door-to-door collecting for something or another? They come knock on your door, they want money or books or whatever, right?
Yeah,
well, Cialdini... Yeah. So Cialdini decided to find a way to improve the results for these door-to-door people. What he did was he had some of them start carrying clipboards. And on the clipboard, they would have short lists of donors, medium lists of donors, or longer lists of donors. Think there was any difference?
Oh, sure.
Enormous difference. The longer the list on the clipboard, even if the person knocking on the door didn't specifically say, hey, look at my clipboard, see all these donors, they didn't have to do that. The longer the list on the clipboard, the better the response from the people behind the door. That's pretty neat.
Yep.
What that says is you don't need to be blatantly obvious about the social proof. It can be extremely subtle. It can be something that's present that you don't even refer to. So you don't have to say flat out in your copy, here's a few of our success stories. You can simply have success stories present. The more of them, the better. Even if you just had 40 of them down the side of the page and you never referred to them, you couldn't possibly get all of those success stories without this really being something that works, right? And so people will pick up on that. That's what social proof is all about. How have you seen social validation or social proof working, Rhonda?
Well, and there are things like... video testimony, certainly endorsements. I mean, on the back of book covers, you'll see quotes by people, and they just depending on the type of book, but usually you'll have some, maybe some are from clients or whatever, that say how great your system was or how great this material was, but they'll be also by industry leaders. And if you have a sales page where somebody who is a perceived industry leader has made a favorable comment, that's like worth 10 ordinary testimonials. So that's another social proof or validation in the way that you see it. And in just people mentioning you or saying things about you, that can happen.
Absolutely. I just happened to notice in our text chat window that one of our guests today is a guy by the name of Ken English. And Ken is an expert and an influencer. He shows folks how to use Blog Talk Radio to help grow their business. I learned about Ken from some seminars that I've been to. And it wasn't that I ran into Ken and he said, oh, I'm an expert at this. What happened was I ran into my good friend, Dr. Ron Capps. And Ron says, you know, Gina, I know you've got that Blog Talk Radio show. You got to go talk to that Ken English guy. He really knows his stuff when it comes to using Blog Talk Radio. So social validation can come into play just from the word of mouth that happens when your customers tell their friends about you. Another form of social validation, right?
Absolutely.
There's lots and lots of different ways that social validation can help you grow your business. Use as many of them as you can get. Know that not all testimonials are created equal, either.
Right.
It would help here for a minute to talk about what makes one testimonial better than another from the standpoint of influence and persuasion. So, Rhonda, what makes a testimonial a good testimonial?
Well, for one thing, having one from an industry leader who touts you is great. But the best testimonials really are something that will say a specific result. I applied the principles in this book, and I did blah, blah, blah.
Yes. You're not looking for testimonials that merely say, oh, this is a great product, you got to buy it. Who the heck cares? I know I don't. That certainly doesn't help to influence my buying decision.
Right.
On the other hand, reading a testimonial that says, you are an idiot if you don't buy this. It's only $17. When I got it and applied it in my business, I immediately made an extra $2,000. Now, that's a helpful comment.
Right.
If I'm only going to spend $17 and I'm going to get $2,000 back, that really makes me want to buy it, right?
Absolutely.
If I not see that comment, but below it, I see a screenshot that shows all these little checks going into this guy's bank account, all of them adding up to more than $2,000, I'm that much more likely to believe what he just told me. You've got to be careful sometimes with testimonials that are results-oriented because they can sometimes backfire if people start going, oh, that's too good to be true. There's no way that's a real testimonial. So by providing screenshots or some other sort of visual proof that the testimonial is indeed real, that helps build up even more persuasive value, and it will influence even more people to take action. I hate testimonials that are just video because of the fact that I don't watch videos ever. More often than not, I'm sitting there on a web page while I'm on a teleconference or while I'm on a coaching call or whatever. I can't listen and read and do what I'm doing all at the same time. So if there's testimonials, I don't ever look at them. What I find helpful, on the other hand, is to have that video-based testimonial transcribed. They're short testimonials, or at least they should be,
right. And
take core elements of it out of the video transcript, put them into the text part, and show it in both formats. Please everybody.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, Rhonda.
No, I was going to say that's what I do, and that's what I teach people to do as well, because for a number of reasons, I mean, you know, sure, you could have a deaf person who is watching that video. You can't lip read one of those little videos. But a lot of times, if people might be at work, they might be doing something else, they may just hate video, it's just better to have that. And plus, it also is actually really great from the Google standpoint to have both formats of it there anyhow, and you're going to be rewarded for that in the end anyway. So it's just a good practice. They're not that long anyway, even if you just take out the key couple of sentences and then put the person's name and location or website, whatever.
Well, that is really great. So, have we covered that one to death on social proof?
I think we've done a good job of hammering that one.
I think so. Okay, so what is our next principle of influence? Well, the next one, we've got two more. The next one, you also hear internet marketers talking about quite often, and that is scarcity. Scarcity is really all about the fact that people are more attracted to the things that they can't have. So, say there's only 100 copies makes you fear that you've got a chance to not get it if there's more than 100 copies sold. If there's a chance that you're not going to be able to get it later, you're more likely to take action on it now. You won't just let it sit there and wait and, oh, you can buy it whenever. What's some good examples of scarcity, Rhonda?
Oh, well, this is only available. I saw you use that this weekend, something that was only available for 3 days, and just last night one saying less than 24 hours left to get this. There are that type of scarcity and time scarcity Although I have to tell you, I was laughing, not about you, but at something else. One time somebody had bonuses that were all electronic, and they were trying to say the bonuses were all going away too. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right, I'm so sure. I said, rethink that one a little bit before you really put that out there, because unless there is really, really, truly something ultra special and you're going to remove them, that's not a great thing to say.
Yes, I would definitely agree. What was I going to say? In the study that Cialdini did, he was looking at a U.S. beef company, and they had made an announcement that because of weather conditions in Australia, there was likely to be a shortage of Australian beef. And it wasn't a marketing play. There really were weather conditions that were occurring in Australia that really were going to affect the supply of Australian beef. Well, the U.S. company saw its orders double. Now, when he later then added honestly that the information had come from the company's exclusive contacts in the Australian National Weather Service, orders increased by 600%. What was the difference between the two?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I had a distraction over here, so I missed a piece of what you said, and I can't honestly answer the question. Sorry about that. I had to deal with something over here. So.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat it. Will you listen this time?
I am here, and I'm available to listen this time. I'm sorry about the distraction.
That's okay. A U.S. beef company announces that because of weather conditions in Australia, that there's likely to be a shortage of Australian beef. When they make this announcement, it's not a marketing ploy. It's something that they're real. It's a fact. Orders go up by double. Well,
a U.S. company about Australian beef. Did I hear that correctly?
You did.
Okay, thank you.
After the first announcement, orders double, they come back, they make a second announcement. In the second announcement, they indicate that the reason that they know this is that the Australian beef company has contacts within the Australian weather channel or weather station, weather service, that's the word I'm looking for. And that
right.
It was as a result of those connections that they're able to know that the weather conditions in Australia are going to affect the supply of Australian beef. The orders went up over 600% with that second announcement. So what made the shift happen? Why so much bigger the second time?
Even greater scarcity was like, even you thought it was bad before, now it's going to get really tight.
Well, it's coupling a couple of the principles of influence together. Now, not only do you have the scarcity factor, now you've got the authority factor because you pulled the Australian Weather Service into it. You've also got the, what's the other one I was going to say? Well, I guess just the scarcity and the authority factor. So it really makes people want to take action even more. If you can combine these principles, use reciprocity with commitment and scarcity, or use commitment and social proof and scarcity, and you put them all together, results don't get a little bit bigger. They get exponentially bigger.
Right.
As marketers, we need to be experts at combining and cultivating each and every one of these principles of influence and persuasion. The better job we do in making that transparent to our readers, to our prospects, the more likely they will be to take action. It's that simple. So scarcity is a big deal. You can make the scarcity thing come up in lots of different ways. What I would not do, I would not lie. Don't just say that something's only got 100 copies being sold and sell 200 anyway. If you say that there's 100 copies being sold, sell 100 copies. If you need to, find a shopping cart that can actually limit the number of units that you're actually selling. You can always say there's only 100 copies being sold at this price, and then change the price. At least you're being honest and ethical. I hate seeing people who just arbitrarily do that. If you're looking for a shopping cart that can do that, there's a couple of them out there that are really good. Sid Hale's wrap system can have a number of units available. You'll find it at askggg.com/RAP. The great thing about wrap is that you can also pay instant commissions to your affiliates with it. The other system that I use that I love has an autoresponder shopping cart affiliate program, support desk, telephone system, all rolled up into one system. And that is called eBizAC that you'll find at askggg.com/EBIZAC. Again, askggg.com/EBIZAC. That's a recent change that they just added into the program, and they didn't even make an announcement about it. I found it by accident one day, and I was like, holy cow, why didn't they scream it from the mountaintops?
Yeah.
But that's a big deal.
It is. It's huge. Wow.
And there aren't very many systems that do that. So I'm really, really happy that they do. And the other thing that they did at the same time was they also added into their tool, in the shopping cart, you can now deliver PDFs that are created on the fly. What that means is you can sell an ebook that is branded, and you can set your shopping cart up so that you take the core ebook and you put that into the download page, and the system pulls the person's information in from their order and adds it to the PDF and prints it out so that you have a branded PDF that you're actually delivering your customer. So how about doing a branded PDF that has only a limited number of copies that are being sold? Even more powerful, right?
Right.
So it can add the reciprocity. You give them something, getting a branded ebook as opposed to an unbranded ebook. And you add the element of scarcity, and now you've got a really powerful combination. So scarcity can come into play lots and lots of different ways. Just be honest and above board with how you choose to use it. It's okay to say only 100 copies available and have the 100 scratched out and the 91, and then have the 91 scratched out and the 72. But make sure that that's really accurate. Don't just pop it up there for the heck of it. It's just not very nice. Okay, so the last element of influence and persuasion. This is kind of my favorite one, I think. Liking and friendship.
Mm-hmm.
People like to do business with the people that they know and like. Plain and simple. If we look back in history, think back to when the U.S. was still in its infancy and we had the Wild West. We didn't have 10 gazillion shoe stores. There was a shoemaker in town. Everybody knew the shoemaker. If they liked the shoemaker, they'd buy their shoes in that town. If they hated the shoemaker, they would not buy their shoes in that town. They'd go to the next town over and go find somebody else that they did like. And people truly bought because they liked or disliked the person that they chose to do business with. It wasn't a matter of who had the cheapest shoes. Price wasn't a factor at all. Well, the same is true when you're using the principle of liking and friendship online, too.
Right.
If you're getting people to like you, know you, trust you, getting people to really perceive you as their friend, even if yours is not the cheapest price on the market, they're going to do business with you because they like you, know you, trust you. Now, that doesn't mean you should have the most expensive product out there and hope that the liking and friendship is enough to get them to buy from you. But what it does mean is you don't need to compete on price anymore. set your price at a value that is fair. Don't worry about it being the cheapest. And use the elements of influence and persuasion to help you make more sales. So now, if you're truly being perceived as an expert and an influencer, you're going to get more traffic simply because the people that are your prospects and your customers are going to tell other people about you, and hint, hint, that happens even more when you tell them to tell everybody that they know about you. That's what being an influencer is about, right? Dropping hints. So you get more money coming in because of that, more traffic. But now you also get more money coming in because you can charge more for every unit you sell. That's a big deal. And when you truly become an expert and an influencer, that's what happens. It happens just about every time. It's very reliable and predictable. It's just a matter of using those six principles of influence in what you're doing.
Right.
So that's the background info, Wanda. So now how does your blog post help us better understand that?
Well, and I don't go into the Cialdini stuff in there. Well, that's fabulous material. That's a whole other series of blog posts in itself. But when I use the examples of Dan Brown, which we started the show off, 5 million copies of his new novel that's coming out next week. It's already a number one Amazon bestseller. And
already?
Yeah, it's already, and that's in the blog post, it's already number one in all books in Amazon. It's not even officially out. And, yes, you can order it. And you noticed earlier there are different versions available. I mean, phenomenal. 5 million copies in the first print run. 5 million in this print run. Of course, there will be others. I mean, that is phenomenal. The other example that I use is Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Work Week, which that is an absolute phenom. And the book, part of it is, of course, the sexy title, which is, of course, attention-grabbing. The title and the subtitle are fantastic. But there is somebody who is most assuredly an influencer, and he is kind of known for finding shortcuts, finding quicker or better, easier ways to get the same thing done rather than taking the long way. And he's, of course, working on another book and all of that. Now, you talked about earlier directing write to blog posts. I've done that in a couple of different articles or posts on my blog, including where I go right back to a post on his blog, specifically, not just to his site. But he is another person. His book was on the number one New York Times bestseller list, I believe, for 2 years. It's been on there solid. Just an amazing, amazing book about the power of outsourcing, essentially, a lot of resources and things that are in there. Whether or not you believe that either that book or anything that Dan Brown has ever written is a good book or not, it certainly is a matter of opinion. But the point is, regardless of what you may think of the particular book, you have to admit these people are definitely experts, so they know a lot, but they're also able to leverage it into the lives of others in a way that changes behavior because they've been able to build up all kinds of ongoing and long-term buzz and influence over people such that when their next whatever comes out, their next book, it can be a big hit before it even hits the stands.
Yeah, people line up and wait. Wow. Now, it's interesting that you bring up Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Work Week. One of my students recently had an opportunity to meet Tim Ferriss, and his bubble was really burst when he learned that Tim doesn't have a 4-Hour Work Week, that he, in fact, works more like 10 to 12 hours per day.
Right.
And it really influenced, in a bad way, my student. He says, there's no way I'll ever buy another Tim Ferriss book. Why do I want to learn how to have a 4-hour work week from the guy who works 10 to 12 hours a day?
Right.
So there's a message in that, right?
Of course there
is. If you're really going to be perceived as an expert and an influencer, you've got to be congruent with your own message, too.
Mm-hmm.
You got to practice what you preach. You can't just talk the talk. You've got to walk the walk.
That reminds me of somebody that I know, and I don't want to name the person or the program, but it's someone that I ended up meeting. I didn't know him when I first encountered his product. His product has to do with mindset and beliefs, and it was an excellent product. When I talked to this person, I had such a feeling that he needed to go back into his own product and learn it that I've had a hard time wanting to recommend that product to people because I don't feel that that person is in line. So, you know, again, are they still influencers or people like that or like Tim Ferriss? I mean, still an influencer, regardless of what you think of the book or of him or whether a four-hour work week is even possible or whatever, it doesn't change the fact that so many copies were sold that he's been a number one in Newsweek or Business Week, rather, New York Times and somewhere else. I think it was the Wall Street Journal, as well as Amazon, and has been able to achieve all of these things. So he's still an influencer. Agree with him or not, whether you think his book is good or whether you think it's garbage or anywhere in between, or whether he walks his talk. I think you should be congruent with your message and that you should walk your talk.
I do as well. And I think it's a very, very important issue. Very important. I've seen businesses completely shut down just because they didn't follow this one little thing.
Uh-huh.
So don't let that be your business. Be congruent with your message. And along with that, be authentic. I think they go kind of hand in hand, right?
Right.
So I know you talk about being authentic with regard to storytelling, so why don't I let you talk about what it means to be authentic.
Being authentic, part of it is simply being who you are, being true to your message and true to yourself and to what is important to you. When you're doing it in terms of storytelling, in terms of writing a business, what you do becomes public. Other people will find out about it. So if you talk about changing beliefs and getting an abundance mentality and you are frightened for how you're going to make the next mortgage payment and you start scrambling around and trying to get people to buy your stuff because you got to have this income and you got to make sure that X amount of these big ticket things sell because you're going to maybe lose your house if it doesn't happen or whatever, that is an incongruence. That is not being authentic to your message and to what you are all about as someone who is teaching, coaching, sharing a message. So again, that authenticity and the congruence and all of that stuff ends up being wrapped up together, because if you're going to be authentic and incongruent, those things don't really work together.
No, they really don't, do they?
No.
So did we cover everything that was in your blog post?
Excuse me. Yeah, pretty much. You know, the only other thing I talked about in the post, because, of course, it's good to have different examples, and again, agree with them or like the books or not or whatever, they're still examples about influence, and talking about the difference, which we've done on this show, is really important for anyone who owns a business, that you do have to be out there presenting yourself as the expert. And, of course, one of the better ways to do that is to become an author and to create your own book in such a way that you do influence people to keep paying attention to you, to keep getting results, to get onto a list, buy other products from you, keep working with you, you know, building in all of these things that we have been talking about. So when you decide that it is time for you to gain that instant credibility that comes from being an author and to step into being an influencer, I would urge you to check out the following link. And Gina, this will be your affiliate link, of course. Go to instantcredibilitybook.com/Gina, and you can discover the way to do that. That's very much in line with anything you've ever heard on this show from myself and from Gina. Our philosophies are so similar. We could be like sisters separated at birth or whatever. Very, very similar approaches that we have. And that is going to help you to step into that authority. And yes, part of it starts with the belief, but like anything else, you know, success and growing a good, solid business is not winning a lottery ticket. It's not something that just happens. It's something that you have to stack the odds in your favor and you have to prepare for. You have to learn the skills of influence. You have to find your expert voice by standing in your power and telling your story and being true to the message that you have. And so becoming an author will help you to do that and also to grow your business when you do it in the right way.
Yes. Well, thank you for that, Rhonda. I really appreciate that link.
Absolutely.
So each and every one of you, as entrepreneurs, as marketers, needs to be practicing developing the voice of an expert and an influencer. It is never too early to get started in practicing that voice. You want to do it ASAP. Even if you're really not yet set up on a website, maybe you're in network marketing and you've got a self-replicated website and you can't necessarily change what's on it. Well, you're still communicating with people every single day, whether that's through email, whether that's through telephone. You're definitely out there connecting with people. And the moment you're out there connecting with people is the moment at which you should start using the principles of influence and persuasion to help grow your business. In the end, what you'll end up finding is that by having the voice of an expert and an influencer, it will be easier to build the business. It will feel better in building the business. It won't be as much of a struggle, and you will most certainly get better results. And I'm not specifying one kind of results or another, because when you're truly an expert and an influencer, it's better results across the board. More subscribers, more sales, more comments, more JV partners. People will start coming to you. I mean, it's incredible how much that one thing changes everything. You don't have to go out and find affiliates and JV partners to promote your stuff. They start coming to you. It's what really allows you to manifest your own success. One of my team members a couple years ago was really stuck on this one thing within her own business. And I kept saying, "You're not a newbie. You know this stuff." And she kept saying, "But I am a newbie. I haven't made X amount of dollars yet." Well, the dollars aren't what determine whether you're a newbie or not. At least not in my book, they don't. If you've been in the industry for 3 to 4 years, if you've already got a list, if you've already got traffic, you're not a newbie anymore, period, even if you haven't made 6 or 7 figures. The moment that that's happening, even well before you get to that point, you should have been becoming an expert and an influencer. And I'm going to give you the same piece of advice that I gave her. What I told her to do was make it easier on yourself. Don't try to have to do all of this all at once, writing something from scratch that you're going to post on your blog. Go out and find some things that can help you so that you don't have to put all of the elements together on your own. What I told her to do was go find some private label rights articles. Use those private label rights articles as the foundation for the expert part of the equation. What you want to do is add to those articles the influence part of the equation. So let's say you were in the internet marketing niche, and you really didn't consider yourself a very good copywriter, but you had this affiliate product that you wanted to sell that was all about writing better copy as an affiliate marketer. Well, how could you do that? You could go out and find some private label rights articles about how to write better copy. Just take those articles, tell a story at the beginning of the article that really sets the stage for what can happen when you figure out the secret to writing good copy. Allow that story to then lead into the article that was the one you got with PLR. You don't really even need to change it very much, other than to clean up the language a little bit to get rid of the I, me, my, our, us, and we. At the end of that article, you want some sort of a call to action. It can be really short, it can be really long, but you definitely need something. And use that to help you really get the expert and influencer within you out to the world. It will be so much easier when you've got something else to borrow from rather than having to start from scratch. I do cover a lot about these topics in the 30-Day IM Challenge, which you'll find at www.30dayimchallenge.com. If you're not already a part of the challenge, join us right now. We're smack dab in the middle of a challenge. And think about getting upgraded to Gold member so that you can join us Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern for our Wednesday Gold calls. You come in one time, $14.95, and you're a Gold member for life. So you can be doing weekly calls, learning how to be an expert and an influencer every single week. I'm hoping to see most of you, or all of you, I should say, on tomorrow's Gold Call when we get into the nuts and bolts about blogging using WordPress on your own domain and using it to get like 1 to 5,000 unique visitors per day to your website. Putting 10% of those visitors onto your list should be a great call tomorrow. So, Rhonda, thank you so much for today. I really appreciate you. This was a great show, even though Johnny G didn't show up.
Yeah, it was fabulous, and next week we have 10millionbooks.com, so that's going to be very exciting.
Really? That's awesome. I didn't know you had done that.
Yes, I know. I did, and I'm actually creating a messenger book, so I'm excited. Yes.
Ah, Rhonda, thank you so much. You have no idea how badly I wanted to talk to him. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. That's great.
Well, we will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another awesome episode of Relationship Marketing 101. Guys, you do not want to miss this one with 10millionbooks.com on the line with us. So thank you so much, everybody. See you next week. Take care.